Bonjour everyone and welcome back to Casser les Lignes, the first episode of 2022. Happy New Year to anybody who's listening. Hope you are all safe and sound. I know in Australia, everyone's freaking out because we have 3.5 cases of COVID. And I hope everybody else around the world is doing okay. Today, the first episode of 2022 is a pretty special episode, actually. A few games were canceled over the weekend. And so, I decided to do something that I wanted to do for a while, and I'm lucky enough to have found a friend who was also keen. We're going to do a bit of a look back at the first half of Ligue 1 season and have a bit of fun with it. And so I have a special guest on from Le Classic podcast. Baptiste is here with me. How are you, Baptiste?
I'm good. Thanks, Jeremy.
Sorry, Baptiste, but Bapo when I heard Le Classic for the English speakers. Thanks for being here with us. Tell us, I guess, a little bit about, your love for French football and about your podcast, Le Classic, for anybody who hasn't listened to it.
Yeah, thanks, Jeremy. So I'm a French national. I've grown up in the UK, but I've been brought up on the good Ligue 1 fare and the French national team, over the last more than sort of 25, 26 years. So it's obviously an important part of my culture, and it's an interesting league. So always love following it. And Le Classic is just a project with a friend of mine who loves French football as well. And we just enjoy talking about sort of recent French football history rather than sort of a weekly, look at the games, etc. We've got quite sort of busy lives, and it's more for fun than anything. But it's about various themes and various teams across the years. So we looked at, the Dominic years, the head of French team, for example. We looked at the Euro, we looked at the players who came across to the UK or abroad and who were tagged as the next Zidane, etc. And we've also done sort of the top 50 French Premier League players of all time that we haven't finished yet, but it's been quite an interesting. So it's just a pleasure, just for fun. But obviously we both love French football and it's a good opportunity to talk about French football.
If you haven't listened to Le Classic, please and go and give it a listen. It's exactly what Baptiste is saying, and it's pretty untimely, being the look at all those yesteryears and even the Euro for earlier this year, last year. Sorry, we're in 2022 now. go give it a look. It's very interesting, and if you don't know a lot, or if you're interested in the French history through football, it's a good look, and clearly you guys are doing a good job there. Today for the pod, Baptiste, so when we discussed, we had a good idea that came up, and so we're going to channel our inner Bill Simmons and Ryan Russillo for people who know NBA and understand what the redraftables would be in the Bill Simmons podcast. So we're going to do basically a bit of a draft of the best players of Ligue 1 after 19 games. We're going to focus on Ligue 1 only for the first half of the season. And we're going to pick what looked like a starting 11 with the best players first. And I guess we're just going to talk about what player we think are the best in our competition and are the more worth of being talked to. I'd be surprised, maybe we'll meet again in July to see how many of those players are still in Ligue 1 at the end of the season. Because about two or three, I wouldn't be surprised if they all leave, and maybe it's a point in itself to explain why the best players don't stay in Liga. I guess it's a good way of explaining it. Then we'll do a bit of a social media push where we'll explain where we put our team so you guys can react to it who are listening, and you can tell us if you disagree, or you can be upset at us for not including your favorite center back or your favorite striker. Before we go into that pretty cool draft of Ligue 1, though, let's quickly look at the results of the weekend, and we'll talk about a couple of games, I guess. So it was match day 20. Like I said, a few games were cancelled. The game that were played, Marseille finally won in Bordeaux on Friday night, Saturday morning here in Australia. 1-0, the first win for Marseille since 1977 in Bordeaux. I was going to say as the Stade Pierre Lescure, but it's not Pierre Lescure anymore. It's the Matmut Atlantic now. the goal by Sengiz Under. Lens and Rennes played on Saturday, and a win for Lens 1-0, an important win between two teams who were struggling in December. A goal at the 89th minute for Wesley Saïd. And then Brest-Nice was played in Brittany, and Nice won 3-0 despite being down to 10 men for about 70 minutes after Schneiderlin was sent off. Dolberg, Delorgue, and Guiri, the three offensive stars of Nice, put their name on the score sheet, and Nice is back on the second spot now, level with OM. Strasbourg won in Metz for the Derby of the Northeast. Ajorc, of course, with a goal and an assist, and Metz, unfortunately, stays in the relegation zone. You're wondering how many more games Antonetti is going to stay on the bench over there. Clermont-Reims and Nantes-Monaco both finished at a 0-0 draw. The first game for Philippe Clément on the bench for Monaco. Some interesting things, but obviously the team still need to get there. And the last game of the weekend, which just finished about an hour ago, was Lyon against Paris Saint-Germain at the Groupama Stadium. 1-1, an early Paqueta goal after a perfect pass by Bruno Guimaraes. And Thilo Kehrer equalizing at the 75th minute on the first professional assist, I think, for Michu. Must be the young Paris Saint-Germain player. PSG with that win stays 11 points clear of Nice and OM, and OL is still on the second half of the table after 19 games. They have a game in hand against Marseille. Worrying sign for Lyon. But Baptiste, which games have you watched this weekend, or which game would you like to talk about here an hour after a game?
Yeah, no, so I started my weekend with Bordeaux OM, which was a pretty dire watch, actually, I've got to say. I'm not going to say it was 90 minutes well spent, but 90 minutes spent anyway. But it just felt like a story of both team seasons so far. So obviously Bordeaux completely decimated by COVID, struggling for form anyway. I think Petkovic hasn't exactly put his imprint on the team yet, unless he's going to play sort of 4-2-4 the rest of the season, which I quite, you know, I don't know whether I admire or I think that's, you know, borderline criminal, but it was always going to be a tough ask for Bordeaux. So I wasn't necessarily surprised at kind of how discombobulated they were. But on the other side, I was more surprised at just how sterile Marseille were. And I know we've discussed it separately, but whenever I watch Marseille, it's the build-up up to the opposition box is actually lovely to watch. There's a lot of risk-taking in defense. They play high up. You know, Luan Perez and Saliba on the sides of the three at the back, you know, they know how to play progressively. But apart from Payet, you know, going forward, it's quite timid. And there's not a lot of risk taking, which is weird considering the way they play up to there. So, it's very solid from from Marseille. Organized chaos until the opposition box, and then no sort of ambition or no risk taking, and it made for a relatively disappointing game in the end.
Bordeaux in the 17th place, having a better attack than Marseille, scoring 30 goals when Marseille has only scored 27, and Marseille is third, of course. I feel like tells a story in itself, right? It definitely tells you that the Bordeaux defense is just very leaky, and that if Marseille is where they are, it's not thanks to their offensive prowess, although that's what we all expected from Sampaoli when he first arrived. But yeah, I think I have to agree with you. Like Marseille, you know, their strength is defending, and defending with the ball is what they do best. And so they just keep the ball and make sure that the other team has as few opportunities as possible. Mind you, Bordeaux had a couple of opportunities by Huang Weizhou or Albert Ellis. But it's just very poor offensively, unfortunately, for Les Girondins this season. And without Adli or without all the whole team in form, basically. They're always going to struggle, I think. Not that Marseille is that impressive offensively, but Under was able to score one. And then, beside Payet, not a lot offensively, like you were saying. You'd watch Strasbourg as well. Strasbourg against Metz, the derby. Ajorc with a goal and an assist. And again, a strong show for the Alsatians.
Yeah, my main man, Ludovic, you know, I'm a big fan of his. He's mobile. He's not individualistic. He takes his chances, you know, plays for the team, leads the line really well. He's quite rapid for his size. And actually until the first goal, I thought Metz were actually good value considering they've lost a few players to the African Cup of Nations. They've got injuries. COVID is hitting everyone. You know, they were quite, you know, Niane up top. And actually, De Préville was pretty decent, full of running. I think they just ran out of steam a little bit. And at the other end, you know, Strasbourg, I've been really impressed by them over the last few months. They had a tough start. Julien Stéphane was just trying to get his side to work the way he wants it to work. But they've really come on strong, and they've got a lot of just their system works. It plays to the strength of their players. They didn't even have, I don't think they had Diallo today either. I think it was just Ajorque, but they've got that, you know, that 3-5-2 works really well. And that midfield three is really impressive in the middle of the park. They were good value for their win, yeah.
Yeah, we're seeing, I think, the last souvenir we had of Stéphane at Rennes was a team that was defending well, but not attacking that good. But in Strasbourg, it's definitely turned that around. And yet this morning again, so yesterday again, 19 shots and 7 on target. And yeah, Ajorque, Gamero up front, and the midfield three, Bellegarde, Perkic, and Thomasson. Thomasson really coming into himself, I think, this season, not only as the maestro organizing, but also defensively in the midfield. Does a lot of work for the team. So, yeah, good to see. And for Metz, I think it's just going to be a very complicated second part of the season. Like you said, De Préville kind of bought himself a second youth over there, and it's good to see. But defensively, it's very fragile. And you're wondering what they can do, obviously, without Boulaya right now for a month, and without Ukidja, the goalkeeper, for a bit as well. That doesn't help. I mean, if anybody can save them, you would think it's Antonetti, but yeah. You're also wondering how much credit he has left in Lorraine after being 19, after 20 game, and only Saint-Etienne being worse than him. It's going to be a fun duo between Dupraz and Antonetti to save their team. Let's talk about the game that just finished, Lyon and Paris Saint-Germain, which was a very interesting, very interesting game. I mean, I'd say not surprising for Paris, but a bit more for Lyon, who I think were probably as strong as we've seen them this season. What did you think about the game, Baptiste?
It's just the best I've seen Lyon play over the last few months. I have to say, when he both started with his 3-4-3 a couple of weeks ago, it just felt a bit desperate. That was my first reaction when I saw it. I think there's talent there. Obviously, easy for me to say in my armchair, but you know, there's talent there to play another slightly more progressive formation. And the initial results were not particularly satisfying. But tonight, I thought they played really well. The system worked. I have to say, PSG played right into their hands. They played very narrow. Why would you do that when you've got, you know, three centre backs facing you? But their big players stepped up. You know, Lopez, the spine of their team, Lopez, Boateng, Guimaraes, and Kakré in midfield, Paqueta. I thought Dembélé had a good game up top, actually. So they deserve to edge it. They had the best situations. They had more desire, more endeavour, more creativity. But again, it's kind of a story of their season. They just a bit of bad luck, switching off a little bit. They concede a bit of a weak equalizer. And then on the PSG side, I mean, you know, I personally like Pochettino. I think he's a good manager. I think he's just not the right manager for this team. He's not the right manager for this type of team. He wants to build a project. He wants to bring players through. It was apart from Verratti, and obviously as ever Marquinhos, who was going to help Mbappe do anything in this game? It was shocking. There was nothing. I mean, Wijnaldum might as well have not turned up. He was completely anonymous. They only showed signs of life when Xavi Simons and Edouard Michoud came on. And I think that says a lot about their senior players, actually, that, you know, where were Paredes, Herrera, you know, but to me, it's symptomatic and it's symbolic of just what a shambolic job Nasser Al Khelaifi and Leonardo have done over the years. There's no coherence at all to that club.
To stay actually on that one topic, I'm always interested to hear anybody's thought on Paris Saint-Germain and on what's going on this season. Yeah. You know, there's sort of rumors around words that it's not the last season, but the last season that really matters for Qatar, because the World Cup's coming in December, right? So the soft marketing, if you decided to reduce Paris Saint-Germain as just a soft marketing project for Qatar, is coming to the end. And you're saying that a coach like Pochettino, although he's a good coach, he's not the right coach for that. Is it a bit of, do you think, like Al Khelaifi saying, just whatever, give it to Leonardo and put whatever coach you want to put on, it doesn't matter, and the players can be happy for the last season. I just want to make sure Paris Saint-Germain wins something on the year that we host the World Cup. Or what's your feeling of what goes wrong, or which coach could actually succeed in Paris?
I mean, I think the project's been wrong for a number of years, frankly. You know, you could do a starting 11 of players who came through the ranks at PSG, who are playing at other clubs and playing well. And you can't tell me for Ligue 1, for the 10, 15 games where you might have an injury or you might need somebody to step into the team, you don't need a Herrera, you don't need a Rafinha when you had players like Nkunku at your club. Like, what was in this guy playing? Musa Diaby, what weren't these guys playing? So I think the project for years has been really, really terrible. And that's because I think Al Khelaifi loves stars. I think they have a, you know, they want the next biggest name on the market, and they want to show it's sports washing, right? So they also want to show they've got the financial means to bring somebody. But it's different from, and I think a lot of clubs, this is where Man City is quite different, but a lot of clubs that come into a lot of money always spend a lot of money very early on to bring big names. So, but then over time, it's sort of the reality starts to kick in. And you still spend a lot of money, but it's not the same caliber of players. And, you know, Leonardo brought Thiago Silva, Zlatan. That changed the club. And then they brought Cavani, completely changed the club. Over the last few years, I mean, obviously Messi now, but, you know, Paredes for 40 million euros. I mean, who was on the market for that guy, really, for 40 million euros? No one. You know, and again, Herrera, I know he was on a free, but... you know, so I just think the structure at the club, you've got an owner and a chairman who just want to make a splash, and they love talking to stars, they love being beholden to stars. And Leonardo, yeah, he knows the club, he knows Serie A. He got, you know, Verratti is obviously a great signing that he made, but his early signings were obvious when you had that financial clout, and he still made them, but they were obvious. And since then, I don't think he's proven anything, and he's run down the academy. So, you know, Xavi Simons played tonight, but all rumors indicate that he wants to get the hell out of there. And Michu apparently is really good. I think he's from in and around Paris, so he's probably, you know, feels a bit more affiliated to it. But I have to say, when I watched the game, I just thought, if you're Mbappe, and, you know, Mbappe's Parisian, I think he genuinely loves PSG. I think as a kid... People think PSG has never been a big club, but in the 90s, it was the biggest club in France with Marseille and, you know, Cup Winners' Cup. They won a Cup Winners' Cup. They were Champions League semi-finalists. You know, it is a massive club in France, and people grew up with it. And I think Mbappe did, but if he looked around the pitch tonight, no one was taking any accountability apart from him. And so there's no project. That's why he wants to leave. It's because there's no project.
You're talking about a team that, like you say, run down the academy, scratched their reserve team, I think it was now 6 years ago. And so, like you say, there's just no path for young players to come up. And it is an unsustainable system that they have put through. And like you said, you know, Manchester City, of course, have created the Galaxy City Football Club all around the world. And even other clubs that have come into money have tried to make sure that there is a moment where you don't have to keep injecting the money. But Paris, they just keep injecting the money every year. Even if this year you can say the only player bought was Wijnaldum, all those players that came on the free, you got to pay wages. And when you talk about Donnarumma and Messi, they're probably hefty wages. It is just a weird, unsustainable way of doing business. Coming back onto the pitch, in the post-match interview, Marquinhos said, everyone says we have 1 month to get ready for Real Madrid, but we need to stop talking about Real Madrid. We need to make sure we don't drop point in Liga and we stop losing, because at that point, it'll be too late to think about it if we lose points right now. He knows that the team isn't performing well enough. He's also saying that he doesn't have the players in front of him to be able to break the lines and to go from the midfield to the striker, which is a nice little jab at the Paredes, Verratti, and other Wijnaldum. Can everyone in France thinks, maybe even in Europe, thinks Paris has that magic switch coming in February, where they're going to rock up and be ready for Champions League, except Lionel Messi, who clearly is a living switch. What do you think Paris Saint-Germain needs to do between now and in 6 weeks' time to be able to beat Carlo Ancelotti's Real Madrid?
They have to come up with a structure. It's not, you have to play the right players in the right positions. It's not, to me, it's not complicated. It's, too many players are being given avenues in the team where they are not showing much. Wijnaldum over the last 6 months has been a terrible signing. And frankly, tonight he was poor, but when I saw the starting 11, he looked like he wasn't a right wing. He's not a right winger. What? Why are you bringing a player? Why are you bringing a central midfielder when that's the most stacked area at your club to then play him out of position? I mean, of course he's going to play badly. And I just feel like Pochettino is... And I don't know whether that's his decision or whether he's being told to do that, but he's trying to fit all those players into a starting 11 when they don't work together. It's that simple. You need to put people who deserve it and people who are good enough. I mean, the reality as well is that it's a structurally completely unbalanced squad that they have. It'll be difficult for any coach, even Pep Guardiola coming in, even Sir Alex Ferguson, in old times. How are you going to fit Mbappe, Messi, Neymar, Di Maria? That should be your four, but none of them are tracking. Di Maria sometimes in the big games. Neymar, he's been intermittent for about 3 years. Messi, that's not his game, but that's not also what you should ask of him, because that's not where his value lies. And then Mbappe in the big games, he does track, but, again, that's not what you put Mbappe in the squad for, right? So then you need to build a structure behind it that is solid and that will work, that will link up well. And I don't see, for me, an example is Hakimi. Hakimi is a really good player. I like Hakimi. He's a wing back. He's not a right back. So if you're going to play the flat four, why are you buying a £70 million wing back? That doesn't make any sense. And it doesn't make any sense that you're aiming for Champions League glory. And as soon as that guy's injured, it's Konan Dagba is your fullback. No disrespect to Dagba, but he wouldn't start for Strasbourg. He wouldn't start for half of the Ligue 1 side. So I think it's a tough ask. It's to find a structure. Going back to your question, it's to find a team that fits, and that works well together, and that has an identity. And that's difficult at the best of times. But when the ingredients you have just don't fit, it's going to be nigh on impossible. I struggle. Like you said, they have a switch in the sense that they have great players who can turn it on, and Marquinhos is a great player. He's a great leader. The spine of that team is technically could be good. Marquinhos, Verratti, Messi, Mbappe, that's pretty freaking strong. But I struggle to see them breaking through.
You mentioned those coach, Alex Ferguson and Guardiola. I would think that they're not coming to Paris Saint-Germain if they're being told that this is the squad and you don't have a choice, because they would get rid of half of those players. I was over the Christmas break, I was looking at, you know, what is the Paris Saint-Germain team that can win the Champions League? And what I come up with is, I would assume most people would agree, is a 3-5-2 where, to be honest, Navas or Donnarumma, I don't care, as long as the same goalkeeper plays every single game from January to May. Otherwise, it's going to be hard to perform. And then a back three of Sergio Ramos or Kerrer, with Marquinhos and Kimpembe. On the left, Nuno Mendes, who's showing good things for his age. On the right, Hakimi. The two midfielder, Verratti and Idriss Agey. And then up front, maybe as two number 10, Messi and Neymar, who can be free. And as a number 9, Mbappe. And I think with this team, you're playing on your strength and on your weaknesses. Yeah. What you're saying, you know, the fact that Neymar, Mbappe and Messi aren't going to track down. But at least you still have seven players who can play defensively and like you did against Manchester City, then you can just have Messi and Neymar hanging around at the 30-meter, 40-meter mark so that the defender of the other team don't come too high. And then with that team, maybe you can get there. But he hasn't played this team together since the beginning of the season, has he?
No, and to be fair, there have been rumors of Pochettino wanting to switch to that system, which, like you said, I think it's a really coherent one. Again, you know, they only have two centre backs. I mean, Sergio Ramos, he's either semi-retired or he's just has terrible luck with injuries. I don't know the ins and outs. But then you're relying on Tilo Kehrer, who costs 40 million and doesn't have the level. You know, Nuno Mendes is good. He's raw, but unfortunately, Bernat is injured. If Hakimi goes, you've got Dagba. You know, for me, we laughed at Real Madrid at one point when they talked about Zidanes y Pavones. It's exactly the same thing at PSG.
What's with Nuno Mendes taking all the set pieces this morning? Oh, that last night, tonight, sorry for you. I saw him taking the free kicks and the corner kick. I mean, he's doing well. But I was, in my mind, I had Euro 2021 when Mbappe gets mad with everyone in the French national team because he wants to take every single set piece. And then you got that new kid who comes from Sporting Lisbon who takes them over Mbappe, over Paredes, over everyone. Good set piece taker, but quite surprising to see him in charge of all that.
Yeah, but then Mbappe stood for a free kick and hit the post, right?
Yeah, that was actually a free kick.
It just feels completely unstructured, whatever's going on at that club. And to me, the best team they had to win it was the team under Laurent Blanc. They should have won it. Cavani, Zlatan, that midfield of Thiago Motta and Verratti, you know, Thiago Silva at the back. That was a real good team. And I think that ship has sailed.
That was balanced and that was solid. And I realized that I made a mistake when I talked at the beginning. I said the money spent on Wijnaldum. Of course, Wijnaldum came on the free. And the money PSG spent, they spent on Hakimi, as you said. I think that's going to be the story of Paris Saint-Germain. Lyon, very quickly, you know, like you said, just what they've shown since the beginning of the season. I mean, the goal itself is a beautiful goal that passed from Bruno Guimaraes to Lucas Paqueta. And Paqueta has been very good since the beginning of the season, although he's off a couple of weeks where he wasn't great before Christmas. Just a couple of things. You know, first, maybe a bit trivial, but what happened with Dembele? Did he go to the gym? Did you see how beefed up he is? He looks like a Lukaku or a Drogba in his prime, where he's still as fast as he used to be, but definitely strong on the shoulders. And do you think that the Peter Bos message is going through, or do you think it's only going through in big games against big teams? Because that's basically only when we're seeing Lyon playing well.
I think that's the right question. I'm not sure I have the answer. Lyon have had a habit over the last few years of playing down or playing up to their competition. There's no middle ground. They don't finish off a lesser team easily, and yet they step up. All their games over the last few seasons against PSG have always been tight. And frankly, they've been twice this year. They've been desperately unlucky against them. So I mean, I don't know. What I did see is players really committed, and players who actually And maybe that's credit to the work that boss is doing. And they've, you know, you need weeks to implement things, right? But players who seem comfortable in their roles and who seem to know what they were doing and who were being put in positions that played to their strength. So that, you know, if I were a Lyon fan, the start of the season has been poor. But if they're going to play, you know, obviously football isn't as easy as that. But if they're going to play like this so coherently for the rest of the season, there's something to look forward to. And, you know, players that you would expect to play well, played really well. And you know, some you didn't expect to play so well were also well led. You know, I think Boateng tonight did a great job with Lukeba and Da Silva. One's not really good enough, Da Silva, frankly. Mm-hmm. And Lukeba is very young. He's 18, but, you know, he grew in strength throughout the game. Like I said before, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Kakere. I think he's a great player. And I think he could fit in the midfield with Bruno Guimaraes, just the two of them. And that worked. The only disappointment I had was Aouar. And I feel bad saying that because I think he did a lot of dirty, unseen work throughout the game. I think his defensive work was, you know, him and Paqueta played defensively. I know it's not their role, but defensively they were everywhere. But they just seem to try and fit him somewhere. Aouar, and it's not. I feel bad for him. He's just being played out of position constantly. He played as sort of a. Not a left winger, but a left attacking, left-sided attacking midfielder, and he had no confidence when taking on players, and he made the wrong choices, and that's just because he's out of confidence and being played across the pitch.
But, yeah, he's a midfielder.
Yeah, he's a central midfielder.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, back to the question. Yeah, I think they showed a lot of heart. They showed a lot of endeavor. And a lot of bravery, the way they brought the ball out. They had a clear plan, they worked to it, and it worked. So you can't ask for more than that if you're a Lyon fan, I think.
Just the 3 points and not conceding at the 75th minute against Paris Saint-Germain. All right, that will be us for the 20th match day of Ligue 1. The games that were reported. That were postponed, of course, Lille against Lorient, all because of COVID cases, and Montpellier against Troyes, which will be played at a later date. A very, very quick look at the table to see that Paris Saint-Germain, of course, is up front 11 points above Nice and Marseille, as I was saying. Nice and Marseille with a nice little 5-point cushion on their next teams, Rennes and Montpellier. Montpellier with a game in hand. And all the way at the bottom, Saint-Etienne with 19 games played only is at the bottom with 12 points, 4 points away from Metz and Lorient. Lorient, who has a game in hand? Every single team has a game in hand this day and age.